Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Roeder on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Roeder, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We're going to be joined shortly by Darren McFarland, host of the DDC. Also handles the Predators pre- and post-game duties for the Nashville Predators Radio Network. Joe, we talked earlier about the Preds in terms of the top four on defense. Some interesting comments from John Hines last week that we'll get to here in just a few minutes about Dante Fabbro and Alex Carrier. And it has me wondering, could the Predators potentially be looking to add a top four defenseman this offseason? We're going to spend a lot of time talking about the top six forward group, obviously Philip Forsberg, and what happens there. But I do wonder if maybe somewhere this offseason in the back of David Poile's mind, adding to the defense core, specifically the top four on defense, could be an option for the Predators.
Yeah. I get it. It could make sense. Some of these questions are answered by how they feel about the trajectory of some of these players. Did I just say trajectory of some of these players?
Yeah.
But you got a couple young guys in there who you're not totally sure about still.
Yeah. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in the great Darren McFarland from the DDC. Darren, what's going on? How are we doing?
Good morning, gents. How are we?
We are great.
Good.
Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Darren, we were talking about some comments from John Hines that I caught up with him last week about Fabbro and Carrier and discussing whether or not those two guys are reliable top four defensemen as they move forward here. Said there's a big offseason for them and that they need to get bigger and stronger. Do you think that the Predators could look at adding to the top four on defense this offseason?
I don't think that's crazy. I'm glad to hear him say that because he's more of an expert than me. By the way, I'm sorry for the scratchy voice. I'm sure it's allergies. I didn't pick up smoking.
You sound beautiful.
We're all dealing with allergies in the dust bowl that we live in, but you know, it's one thing for us to talk about it, right? I mean, you could see it. I mean, that's not anything earth-shattering, but you always want to hear it from, you know, somebody in the business, somebody who's the head coach, and they do. I mean, especially Carrier. I think Carrier is a really good player, but there were times, and especially as you guys know in playoff hockey, you know, it gets a lot more physical, and he got pushed around a lot. We've seen that before. We saw it with Ryan Ellis. Certainly there were some playoff series that were really alarming with him getting pushed around. And so I don't think there's any doubt that both of them need to get bigger or need to get stronger. There's no doubt. But do I think, to answer your question, Robbie, do I think they should? Yeah, I do, because I'm not sure it would be a bad idea, especially a veteran guy, to come in and be on the top four, because I think there were at times – they would have liked to have had that option, and they obviously didn't have that option throughout the course of the season. You know how this plays out. But, yeah, I don't think it's a bad look. Do I think it's at the top of the list of things to change? No, it's not at the top, but it's up there. It's up there on the list. So I would be definitely a vote for a yes. In fact, I wear the sticker that said I voted yes.
There you go. I mean, is it too simplistic to just say, like, basically they just, like, John Hines would like more size and strength there, maybe, you know, like across the board, just bigger, stronger, continue to go in that direction?
Well, I think, Joe, with the style that they play, yes. I mean, right? I mean, they're not going to change their identity. And I know everybody hates that word by now, but that word is not going to go away either, because this is the brand of hockey that John Hines feels that they can maximize what they have with their roster. And obviously there's going to be tweaks, but some of the guys, even that have been physical, that are probably going to go away. And I would say the replacement is maybe bigger and stronger, but sometimes it's hard, right? This is the hard dynamic of bigger and stronger. Does that mean that they're faster? Does that mean they can keep up with the speed of the game? I deal with this on a much, 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 much smaller scale continue baseball, right? Like, we all want that big kid, right? That big kid that knocks it a country mile. But what else comes with the big kid? Like, one, he's imposing, right? He scares the crap out of a lot of 10-year-olds. Two, as I mentioned, he can knock it a country mile. But what's the other part that you have to go, oh, but here's the give and take to all this? Usually big, big also means slow. And can they get, the game has changed, right? The game is about speed. And so can a bigger, stronger guy or guys keep up with the speed of the game? Because, look, let's be honest, and I get it, Colorado is elite, but Tampa Bay was too. And we saw it last year, and we saw it this year in just the two meetings. Like, Tampa Bay speed and certain other teams' speed was a lot different than the Predators. So it is a fine balance, right? Like, you want to be bigger and stronger because that's their identity. They want to push back. I love the physical brand of hockey, but you also have to be able to keep up with the game, and the game requires speed. And in Colorado, they were clearly outmatched with speed.
Darren McFarland from the DDC on with us here on Robbie and Rex Show. So, Darren, what did you make of the press conference with David Poile and John Hines? How do you think that they handled the questions that came their way, and did you take anything in particular away from it?
Well, I thought it was well done. I thought, if I'm being totally honest, I thought the first half I was a little surprised at, you know, I thought it would be, it would feel a little bit more like Ryan Tannehill's 17 minutes, and I know it went 45 minutes with the first half. It took a while. It was kind of like the slow first period, right? It's like, okay, that first period wasn't our best, but there's two more periods to go, and away we go. And I think the press conference really picked up in the second half. I thought there were some really good questions asked by you guys. We obviously played the press conference live, and yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised. I mean, I've been talking with David Poile for two decades, so I mean, he's pretty candid guy. You know, I'm not surprised by any of his answers. Other John Hines, again, he's a well-polished guy. Whether you know, sometimes people like think he says cookie cutter stuff, but the guy's intelligent. He knows hockey. He knows how to handle this stuff. And I really wasn't surprised, you know, by some of the news. You know, the backup goalie, they're going to make a change there. Does that surprise the three of us? No. I mean, I think Connor Ingram, it is, unless he just absolutely flops in training camp and preseason, Connor Ingram will be the backup, in my opinion. You know, the question about, is ownership handcuffing you? There was a question that needed to be asked, and David Poile was quick to say he has no restraints, you know, from ownership on his spending habits. I thought the succession plan was a good question there at the end, and, you know, he said that there was no succession plan, and in particular with this on Brian. Look, I'm not calling anybody a liar. Don't take this the wrong way, but I just don't believe, as long as David Poile has been doing it here and at his age, that there's no succession plan discussed whatsoever. Or there's not, you know, it may be in pencil, but I have a hard time believing that there is no plan. Nothing has been said. Like, what is, you know, the plan when David Poile says, you know, I'm done, I want to call it a career? Like, I don't know how you guys feel about that. Again,
agreed.
I'm not calling anybody a liar. I know he's not going to say it publicly. Like, great question. Here it is. I've got it all laid out. Let me tell you guys. So this is what's going to happen. Here's page one. I didn't expect him to do that, but I also don't believe that there's no succession plan in place. You know, some other things quickly, Cunning and Tolvanen and not living up to expectations. Well, duh. I mean, Cunning went 38 games with 1 point. I mean, you know, that's not even opinion. That's just a hard fact that they didn't live up to expectations. And, you know, I do think John Hines is going to have, and I don't think it's going to happen moving forward, but he's got to answer the question of why you felt the need to keep Cunning basically up there for a bulk of the season. There was really no explanation. Okay, you could say, well, there was no better option, really. Like, there was no better option for 1 point for almost half of a season. Like, I think, honestly, anybody, a warm body, anyone from Milwaukee, heck, Afanasyev, who, yes, you know, I want to see him succeed, and maybe he's not ready. He could have given you a point in 38 games. So, overall, I thought it was really good. I don't know how you guys felt about it, but, you know, I thought it really picked up in the second half, and they understand that. I think they also understand the lay of the land. I think they understand that this market and this fan base doesn't feel the same that it's felt in the past. I mean, there's some anger, and, you know, I understand that. I understand the fans being mad. I understand expectations. I understand when you raise prices and you make tickets more difficult, then, you know what, on one hand, that's good for business that your tickets are in demand, and on the other hand, expectations go up. So, overall, I would say it was, you know, it was a really good press conference.
So did you come away feeling Better, worse, the same on the Preds' chances of signing Philip Forsberg?
Oh, boy, that's a great question, right? Because, I don't know, if I'm being honest, Joe, I think my chances every week get slower. I'll tell you right now, throughout the course of the season, most of the season, I felt like, look, this may go a while, but in the end, it's going to happen. I guess I'm still above 50%. Like, maybe I'm 55, 60 tops, 60, 40, 55, 45 that he comes back. But I've got to be honest, every week that goes by, and then even hearing David Poyle say, you know, and maybe, you know, he hits the free agent market. I know he's got to say, and there's a plan B, C, and D. He's got to say all that stuff. But I would say this is probably the lowest my odds have been this entire time. So I'd probably put it at 60-40 back.
Darren McFarland from the DDC, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Row, joins us every Monday morning at 9 o'clock. Darren, great stuff as always. We'll catch you at 10 o'clock.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Darren McFarland, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts on the Preds, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, 1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road and Michelle Knezevic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Thanks to Darren McFarland for joining us in the last segment. Joe, we brought this up earlier about Dante Fabro and Alex Carrier, and there's been some interesting reaction on the text line. Some people think that the Predators absolutely should go get a top four defenseman. Some people think they should get two. It's going to be hard to pull off getting two top four defensemen, two top six forwards, and re-signing Philip Forsberg, but we'll see what happens on that front. How do you view the current
plethora of cap space?
Yes. How do you view the current situation the Predators find themselves in terms of their defense core? Because we've spent so much time over the last week and a half since they've been eliminated, 2 weeks, I guess, from today, since they've been eliminated, talking about the forward group, and I understand why, because that's a big problem that they've got to get figured out. But their defense was atrocious coming down the stretch. They gave up, you know, we've gone through the list, 8 to St. Louis, 6 to Tampa Bay, 5 to Calgary, 5 to Minnesota, 7 a couple different times to Colorado in the playoff series. We can go up and down the list of the goals they gave up. Yes, some of that is goaltending. A lot of that is defense as well. It was not a great end to the season there. And, you know, John Hines basically said about Carrier and Fabro, it's a big offseason for them. They got to get better. And right now they're not there to the point where they can compete at a high level and help you win in the playoffs. That's got to get better as they move forward. How do you view the current situation on defense as it relates to maybe the checklist that David Poyle's going down this offseason?
Yeah, well, I think that what he does will really tell us what they feel about those guys. Although I guess, you know, you could still then be like if they go get someone who clearly is going to be a top four defenseman, then I guess we have to wait until a lineup comes out to find out which one they're talking about, right? But I like Carrier, and I think Carrier has his rough moments, and there were some times in the Colorado series where Alex Carrier didn't look so hot out there. I would say he was maybe as pleasant a surprise as there was last season, and I still think he's a solid player, and I think you can make a case for him, you know, to continue to be a top four defenseman. Fabro got better this year, but you talk about, I mean, it looked to me almost like he just doesn't fit with what Hines wants to do last year. Played more this year. He took a step, but what's the ceiling? Is the ceiling as high with Dante Fabro as most people thought when he was drafted, or even most people thought when he came right in 2019 and did a pretty good job on the third pairing in that playoff series against Dallas? I don't know. I feel like it's maybe not quite as high as we thought.
I think there's a chance that that could be the case. And look, I'm not saying that if you're the Predators, you've got to get back to the days of Yossi, Ellis, Ekholm, and Subban out there, because that was
– it would help.
I mean, it was incredible. That that run that we keep talking about, the 2017, which, by the way, 5 years ago yesterday, that they won the Western Conference. So there's that. But that run that we keep talking about, they were a big part of that in terms of how they got there. Now, Ekholm-Subban was an incredible shutdown pairing. Ellis and Yossi were really good that postseason, and that's how they built their team. You can build a team that way, and you can win that way. It's very difficult to get four guys at that level that you're not paying a ton of money to. And, you know, I think Yossi is obviously still at that level. Ekholm, I think it's fair to say he took a step back this year. I still think he was good, but offensively, probably until later in the season, he started to come on a little bit. Offensively, probably not where you expected him to be this year. Defensively, though, he and Carrier were the ones that got the shutdown minutes. Like, when they were matching up against other teams' top lines, a lot of times it was Ekholm and Carrier. Honestly, for the most part, I thought Carrier did a good job. Not great in the playoffs. I think both Carrier and Fabbro have been good enough to show you that they have flashes of top four defensemen in them. My question is, are they good enough top four defensemen that you can win with in the playoffs? And right now, the answer is no. Like, I don't think they're good enough right now that you could win in the playoffs in a consistent basis with those guys in your top four. Now, you know, you get more players on your top six and you're more dangerous 5-on-5 offensively, then maybe that changes a little bit. But I still think they could use another body there.
Yeah.
And maybe a guy like Fabbro is better served playing in a little bit more of a limited role. And if somebody gets hurt, then you have somebody that can then step in to your top four.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's got to be on the table. I honestly have been thinking more along the lines of what forwards they could go get.
Sure.
But which, again, I mean, all this stuff gets dictated by what happens with Forsberg, which is still the biggest question, and that's where it's hard to even project what they might do, because, you know, if they do lose him, then you've obviously really got to focus on the forward group, and I just don't know that, other than Johnny Gaudreau, and I don't even know that does it. Although, like you said, he's a better player, but I mean, you're totally different if you lose Forsberg. But I think clearly they're not what they used to be with their defense core. Moving on from Ellis was certainly, obviously, the right thing. And Fabbro is, I mean, that's to me, and that, you know, it's Hines talks about, we played the Hines audio earlier about, you know, what those guys need to do and stuff like that. But I mean, Fabbro's never going to be a big hulking physical defenseman, you know, it's just not what he's going to be. So is that okay? Is that okay with John Hines?
Well,
does he want to get bigger and stronger?
And I think the question you bring up is a good one too. Like, is that what you need to do? Like, do you need to just bulk up everywhere? Now, you look at their defense core right now. You know, they've got Borowiecki, who's a third pair guy. Lozon's a bigger guy. Ekholm's a big guy. But Ekholm's the one that's really playing the most minutes out of that. Like, when you talk about bulking up a defense core,
they've had other big guys.
They've had other
play.
Big guys. Like, you got to be able to skate.
Right.
And, you know, Ekholm's kind of the perfect combination of, he's big, he doesn't get pushed around, and he skates really, really well. Those guys just don't grow on trees. I understand that. But, like, if you're Colorado, like, Colorado's got Sam Girard, or did until he got knocked out of the playoffs the other night, and Cale Makar. Neither one of those guys are big. They skate really, really well. That's why they're really good. Roman Yossi's not big. Roman Yossi's not really physically – he doesn't really push people around out there. He just is really good positionally, and he skates incredibly well. That's how those guys are effective. So I understand what John Hines is saying about, you got to get bigger and bulk up and all that stuff. And I think there's a place for that. And certainly, I think if you found a bigger guy in your top four that can move, I'm all for it. But it doesn't necessarily have to be built that way to win.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have that balance. You got to have skill and skating. I mean, is Lozon at any point potentially a top four defenseman?
I don't see it.
You don't see it.
I'm not saying that – I mean, I can't be wrong. I just – I don't see it. Like, I know – Willie has talked about, Well, he's a third pair guy that could play situationally in the top four. I mean, I guess technically he could play in the top four situationally. I don't think he'd be very good in that role. So I don't see him as a top four guy.
Who out there is realistic? Like, who out there would actually be an upgrade? Who is attainable for, you know, not a huge price?
Well, you've got Letang that's scheduled to be a free agent. He's 35. I believe that he's not coming back to Pittsburgh when I see it. And honestly, at 35 years old, I don't know if I'm spending a whole lot of money on Chris Letang. Klingberg is kind of the big free agent fish out there, defenseman-wise. But I don't think the Predators need to go out and spend that type of money on a top four guy. You know, Nick Leddy's out there. Connor Murphy's out there. Hey, PK Subban's out there.
There you go. Run it back. Yeah.
I do wonder where he's going to end up. Because Willie.
TV studio?
Well, I think that may be the case.
He's good. I like him. I like him in the studio.
He's very good. But, I mean, the point is there's not a ton of great options out there. So this could be one of those things where you've got to maybe get creative and trade for a top four defenseman. Now, what does that look like? I don't know. Maybe they're comfortable just saying, you know what? We got enough stuff to worry about with our forwards. We're just going to trust that Carrier and Fabro come back in, and with another year of seasoning, Carrier, first 82-game NHL season out of the way, he takes a step next year, continues to get better. Fabro playing with Yossi again next year, continues to get better. You know, that's probably the most likely scenario of what happens in terms of that being the way they handle it. I do wonder if they take a look, though. I mean, do you want to get – that's the other part of this. We talk about the direction of getting younger. A lot of these defensemen that are on the market are 30, 31, 32. Do you want to go out and get one of those guys and get older that way while helping your top four at the same time? I don't know if that's something that they would entertain or not.
I think there's a pretty good chance the Preds become an older team next year.
Yeah.
A little bit, right? I mean
if you're going to get a top six forward, you have to.
Right. So, they've gotten younger, which they badly needed to do. They've been able to watch a lot of these guys, and that's the thing. I think that we did at that press conference get a lot of frank conversation from both Hines and Poile about certain players, but there's still a limit to what they're going to – they may be totally out on one of these guys and resolve to move on, and if that's the case, they're not going to come out and say that. But, I mean, that's a question. Like, how much of a look do you feel like you've gotten? I feel like Fabro –
you got it's 174 games, a regular season sample size.
And, of course, there's what's that? There's a number that eludes me. It's like you shouldn't judge a defenseman in this league until
– it depends on who you ask. Games. Some people say 100. Some people say 200.
Yeah.
So
he's in that.
If you're going 200, you haven't got there yet.
There you go. So, but, I could be wrong, too. I mean, if they – let's say they move Fabro. You tell me in a couple of years, all of a sudden he's this dynamic defenseman. Somebody, I wouldn't be shocked out of my mind, but we've seen quite a bit of him. We've seen and Tolvin, and I know we're talking defenseman, but Tolvin, and I don't know. To your point earlier, what are you going to get for him right now? In terms of value, your probably best value is hoping it works out. But
right now, like, I've heard people throw out the trade Tolvanen thing. Right now, to me, like, the most likely scenario of Tolvanen being traded is like a throw-in piece with a different trade. That's, to me, what a Tolvanen trade piece looks like right now. Like, I'm sure that there would be interest around the league because somebody is always going to look at the potential and say, yeah, I'd like to take on that, but they're not giving you a ton back.
Yeah.
So I think he's back next year would be my guess.
And then someone asked about Ferentz on the text line. At some point, that could be something.
I don't know that he's ready.
How soon?
Yeah. I think it's when he signed, so he signed out of college and got a look up here. I thought, okay, well, maybe one day he can be a top four guy. Maybe still he could be, but I think he may be a ways off from that at the moment. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Preds. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Take your thoughts on the Titans as well. Any way you want to go up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5-106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. John, look at this Titans offense. You got Robert Woods coming off an ACL injury. Treylon Burks, your first-round draft pick. Other than that, not a whole lot there at wide receiver. Our guy Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, friend of the show. We know what he's going to be. Solid player. I think in an ideal scenario, probably your number four would be my guess. But right now, probably number three on this team. Do you think the Titans should go out there and add another veteran wide receiver with guys like Will Fuller on the open market? Cole Beasley is on the open market. There's a couple different ways you could go with it. Do you think the Titans should be entertaining the idea of trying to add another veteran wide receiver?
I think they should be entertaining the heck out of it. Now, you know, can you do it? Is there someone who really makes sense? I'm a little bit intrigued by Will Fuller. Will Fuller is, he would be someone who does something, provided he can still do it, that the Titans don't have, which is someone who can just take the top off the defense. One of my favorite recent cliches in football.
Randy Moss.
Is that what he says a lot?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Everybody says it now. But you know, the Titans don't have anybody who it has just a straight ahead, you know, burner kind of. I mean, I thought in the draft going in, well, before I, and of course, this is with A.J. Brown, I thought that they should think in those terms, you know, as they're looking at receivers. I mean, going into the draft, man, we were talking about Jameson Williams. Yep, take him. Yeah, well, didn't have a chance to. But it's hard to find guys with elite speed, and I think Will Fuller, again, if he still has it, even if he plays like, you know, 9-10 games, you might have a couple more wins, you know, if you have a guy with that kind of skill set. So I'm not big on Cole Beasley. You draft Kyle Phillips. I think you go with the young rookie who looks like he can play, and we'll see. But I'd go with that, especially based on just what he did in rookie camp. I think he's got potential. Odell Beckham?
Maybe so.
Hey, guy was pretty good. Michelle sent us this thing on the Bitcoin. I remember that now. Like he's netted like $35K from his contract because he has to be paid in Bitcoin.
Nailed it.
My goodness. John Robinson, baseball cards. I had a great collection, Odell.
Got a whole lot of them here, man. You asked earlier if Will Fuller had ever played in an entire season. His rookie year, he played in 14 games.
Yep.
Since then, it's been 10, 7, 11, 11, and 2 last year with the Dolphins. Two games.
Not a good trend.
Now, he was suspended, I believe, to start last year for PEDs or whatever. But 2 games last year for the Dolphins. He had 4 catches for 26 yards.
And when you get hurt that much, PEDs, and that kind of adds up.
You should be able to get him relatively cheap, I would assume.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. That's an average of – I'm doing the math in my head. That's like an average of like 5 a year. Well, maybe a little bit better than that. 6-7 a year?
Around 7 or 8.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there's slim pickings out there, you know. But, I mean, a lot of this is – it's like with the Preds. We're talking about Fabro. Like we got to see a full season of Fabro, Tolvin, and like it's easier to kind of gauge where things may be going with that. How has Dez Fitzpatrick been doing? Like how's he working? Is it clicking for him? Is it coming together for him? I mean, he got cut, you know, re-signed to the practice squad, did a little bit on the field last year, also made some mistakes on the field last year. What's Racy McMath? Does he have a chance of becoming more than a special teams guy with really good speed? He's got the body to be
the next Julio Jones.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, like if they feel good about one of those guys, even then I could see them being like, yeah, you know, roll with this. But based on them being unknown, Robert Woods coming off an ACL, he's going to be a good player this year. Treylon Burks, no idea. Westbrook-Ikhina is solid. That adds up to you need to add something.
Yeah, I think so too. And I mean, the question, there's not a lot out there. We talked about them adding receiver depth when they had A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown, Robert Woods, and I said even then, yeah, go draft Treylon Burks. You need more receiver depth. And now you don't have A.J. Brown. So it's not difficult for me to see a scenario this year where their receiving corps is not very good. Like everybody's expecting Treylon Burks to come in and to be able to figure it out immediately, and maybe he will. I'm not saying that he can't do that, but what happens if he doesn't? And you've got Robert Woods coming off an ACL, Treylon Burks not being able to quite figure it out yet, and Nick Westbrook-Ikhina is essentially your number two at that point. That's probably not a very good spot the Titans want to be in.
No, on top of an offensive line that has serious questions, quarterback who knows what he'll be, but he is a product and part of his environment, and last year it didn't help him. And then the regressing running back, who that was a joke.
Yes, the running back in free fall.
It's all on Derek.
Some people.
Yeah. It's all on Derek. Well, look.
This could be the year for the go route, man. The wheel route to Derrick Henry. I've been waiting on it for 2 years.
They have to try.
This could be it.
They have to try one freaking time, right?
I don't even care if it's in the preseason at this point. Just send him on a wheel route, see what happens. Tell me he can't out-jump a defensive back? Yeah, he can. He'll go get the ball.
I mean, they may need to do that. They need to throw him a little bit. I mean, what about as a pulling guard? He'd be devastating.
He would be. Now the Niners sent Trent Williams in motion last year, lined him up as a tight end and just plowed through people. That's what you do with Derrick Henry.
There you go.
When you're not giving
back,
him the ball.
Yeah. I mean, the only area where I'm sure that they're going to be better is at tight end. Which is good. I mean, they needed to get better there, and I think they have. And Austin Hooper, if he's Cleveland Austin Hooper, it's still better. If he's Atlanta Austin Hooper, then okay, that could be promising. You take some of the pressure off the receiving core there, but I think you still need more. Or again, you need ? All to be answered in your favor.
Chris on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, "Whatever happened to Cam Batson? He's out there. He's available."
Yeah, yeah.
That could be something that they do.
It's possible.
But you have Kyle Phillips and you have Mason Kinsey. Like, do you want Cam Batson lining up a ton on the outside? I don't know.
Nah, I mean, with Batson's injuries and everything, I guess I'd kind of be surprised if they go back to him. But I was convinced they weren't going back to Michael Pruitt, so it's possible. But I don't think that Cam Batson is this huge answer for all this. He's a heck of a story. He's been probably as inspiring a player as they've had in the locker room. He's a good player, but I think you need a little bit more size and someone who can play on the outside and have a little bit more speed.
We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 1025, 1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Discussing the Titans, taking your thoughts throughout the remainder of the show here. The Titans on the field this week, so Rex Road will get to see some football in person coming up this week. He's looking forward to it.
Exciting. Exciting stuff.
I'm interested to see you bring up the tight end position. I'm interested to see how big of a factor Hooper in particular can be this year. Okonkwo, we'll see how he's able to come along and grow and see how quickly he can be ready. But Hooper he's an intriguing guy because I thought in Atlanta when he left and went to Cleveland, I thought he was on his way to becoming – I'm not saying like Travis Kelce or George Kittle or anyone like that, but a top-level tight end in this league, kind of that next tier below those guys. I thought he was on the way to being that, and it just didn't really work out in Cleveland. For whatever reason, some of it was injury. Some of it may have been the quarterback that was in Cleveland. Some of it was the offense. But the numbers were not as good with the Cleveland Browns. I'm interested to see what he looks like here with the Titans and how big of a factor he can be over the middle. We talked about it. I mean, you basically, until the very end of last year where Ferkser came on a little bit, you didn't get much from the tight ends. Michael Pruitt was a nice player. He had some big catches in, you know, in the red zone last year, but really not a lot that you got from the tight end position. I'm interested to see how big of a factor Hooper can be this year in this offense.
Yeah, it's got to be big. And a lot of different factors that hurt Tannehill last year. Tannehill, number one on the list, by the way. Still comes down to your quarterback, most important player, makes the decisions, pulls the trigger, so start with him. But protection certainly fell off. I think the OC change was, you know, I mean, going from Arthur Smith to Todd Downing was a step down. And I think that the lack of tight end was a big, big deal. I really do. Jonnu Smith, and honestly, even like pre-21 Anthony Firkser.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. There was a history of Tannehill and Firkser having a pretty successful chemistry. It just very rarely materialized, I think probably in part because of Firkser being a little bit banged up. But regardless, no consistent tight end presence in the passing game, I think, hurt Tannehill, and they've tried to address that. They may be stepping backward with the offensive line. I don't believe there's any doubt they're stepping backward with the receiving core. Step forward at tight end, I think, is pretty good bet, and it needs to be a big step forward.
It needs to be a big step forward, and you know, it's easy to see where this offense, there's a ton of question marks on this offense this year. And we've talked about Derrick Henry throughout the show today, but this is starting to feel like a similar conversation, maybe not quite as extreme, because I mean, you're talking about a defense 2 years ago that was about as bad as it gets in terms of pass rush. So they signed Bud Dupree last year, and we were wondering, okay, well, that could help, but how much are they going to be able to affect the quarterback, and can they ever get off the field on third down? Now, this offense wasn't great last year. It wasn't, like, historically bad either, so it's not the same scenario, but it's easy to look at some of the departures with Roger Saffold and obviously with A.J. Brown and think to yourself, it's going to take a lot of things going right for this offense to be good this year, and there is a scenario where it could be pretty tough to watch out there offensively.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't historically bad. It was supposed to be historically good.
Yeah.
So certainly, if you want to look at the bright side of the offense, it has a chance to actually meet expectations because they've gone way down. But it is also, like, think of the path of the Titans offense versus defense. You know, pretty good, like, defense in 17 and 18. The offense was the issue. Mariota, is he the guy? They need to do more stuff for Mariota's skill set, more RPOs, whatever. And then, you know, you flip it, and you have all of a sudden you find magic on offense with Tannehill and Henry and everything, and then you completely fall off defensively in 2020 with Dean Pease moving on, can't rush the passer, the worst third down defense ever. I mean, it's just – and then now you quickly – do a reversal on that, and on paper, I think this defense could have a chance to be the best in the NFL. I mean, I'm not saying it's the best in the NFL, but I'm saying it's like in the five or six teams that should be discussed.
Well, you got Buffalo as the best defense in the NFL.
I do.
Buffalo's got the 85 Bears defense out there and like the greatest show on turf
and
combo.
And the 85 Dolphins offense.
Yeah.
That's what Buffalo is. Yeah. I know. I don't know why. I just think they're going to win it all this year. But
I mean, it's not a crazy
yeah.
pick.
Crazier things have been picked. But I mean, I think, you know, the Titans could be great. I mean, I just think you're talking about a team that is going to have to win 20-17 and 24-20. Not as fun, but winning's fun if you win.
Yeah,
and it'll be okay. It'll be fun to watch his defense. Fun to watch his pass rush.
Joe, very quickly.
We'll just introduce them before every game. Them, them, and Derrick Henry. Yes. Can you do it where you introduce the defense and also on offense, Derrick Henry?
Derrick Henry.
No one else on offense will appear today.
Thank you. Except starting and hopefully finishing this game, number 77, Taylor the One. He's back in there. Joe, very quick. We talked about, you know, the state of the Vandy baseball program heading into postseason play a little bit earlier. Tim Corbin. It's a rough weekend for the Doors. He did not address the media after the sweep was over, 21-10, the final score against LSU. He is talking this morning, and I'll just pull a quote the Gentry Estes has put out there from Tim Corbin. Quote, "This bleep means a lot to me. I'm an emotional guy. The day that I don't give a bleep is the day that I won't be in this chair." This is coming from Tim Corbin this morning. So we talked about it.
What the heck, man? They run this Zoom when we're doing our show? Come on.
There's not a soul that I have ever encountered that hates losing more than Tim Corbin hates losing. And I think this kind of goes with that. I didn't love that he didn't address the media, I'll be honest. I don't really like it when that happens. But with Tim Corbin, I kind of understand it from being around him.
Wow.
Guy hates losing so much.
By the way,
so
Gentry
much.
Spelled out the naughty words,
he
Gentry.
Did.
Tisk, tisk. Wow, that's a good quote. Good quote from Corbin. He's making up for not talking other day. Now, I mean, I don't know that I've seen someone so affected to the point where it's just like, you know, and I mean, I've talked with Maggie Corbin about this. Sometimes it's like, just stay in the office, man. You know, I mean,
you just like, stay right there.
I mean, it's I don't like lots of like Vrabel, you know, tough loss, and he's liable to be a little more like sarcastic type thing.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, Corbin is just like wants to strangle you after he lost a game. You know, I mean, I shouldn't joke about that, but like he is so mad.
He's really mad.
It's incredible. I mean, it's kind of fun. I'm sure not fun for him, but yeah. I mean, in general, I'm not a fan of like the coach not talking to the media after the game. Media comes cover you, you know, and the player talks instead. But with Corbin, I'd say every once in a while, a mulligan's probably appropriate.
Yes.
And that's just, I mean, you're talking about a team that was in position to host, coming off a huge series win at Arkansas,
up 8-4 in the seventh inning,
right, to salvage one game, lose 21-10, give up 42 runs, get swept by LSU. Definitely not hosting now. I mean, it's a brutal weekend for them, and I don't know where it's going from here, but it might be Vanderbilt, Tennessee on Wednesday, I believe.
Yeah,
so that'd be fun.
Vanderbilt needs that game, like you said earlier, Tennessee in this tournament. I mean, they very well could go on to win it. They probably will. But it means not much.
It's just another achievement you can add to the list before you get to the main course. I don't know that it means that much. Honestly, I don't know that this tournament means that much for Vanderbilt.
I mean,
they're traveling first weekend for sure. So
we'll have more on that. We'll get into some college baseball tomorrow. Postseason play beginning this week. This is going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. The DDC coming up next. You're listening to ESPN 102.5 106.3 The Game.